Hey there! This episode of Tales from the Backlog, just like every episode, is brought to you by the wonderful patrons who have chosen to support the show over at patreon.com/realdavejackson. These personal heroes of mine are Chris Nelson, the Top 3 Podcast Crew, Chris Copleen, Eric Guess, Rick Firestone, Nick Ficori, Jill, Jeff, formerly Jerf, Kieran, Soccer, ZNA, Cupcake, Kyle, Christian S., Matt aka Stormageddon, JD, Doug Leaf, Jason Emery, Brian Skirsha, Randall, Jake Martin, Jenny E., and many more. Your support is truly appreciated, and if you're listening and you'd like to be like them, once again, that's patreon.com/realdavejackson. All patrons are able to vote in monthly polls for a game that I do on the show, and there should be one happening right about now. So if that sounds interesting to you, head on over. As little as $2 per month will get you voting rights and a bunch of other treats. And with all that being said, let's get on to today's episode about Sunset Overdrive.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dave Jackson, and you're listening to Tales from the Backlog. This is a video games review podcast where each week I'm joined by a guest to bring a game out of the backlog, play it, and discuss. My guest today is a friend of the show, streamer, YouTuber, and parkour punk rocker, Guhi. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk about this game. I was so excited to be able to revisit this game. It's just such a, it's such an amazing experience, and I feel like this game was so underrated, so I'm super stoked to be talking about it with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you on the show. It's good to meet you for the first time, and today we are going to talk about a game that I feel like is not really talked about a whole lot anymore, so I'm pumped for that. That game is Sunset Overdrive, which is an action game developed by Insomniac Games and published by Microsoft Studios for Xbox One and PC in 2014. Weird to see an Xbox-exclusive Insomniac game in this day and age. That was a trip for me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're seeing games like Ratchet & Clank now more recently, and those remakes of those games, although done really, really well, are PS5 exclusives, so it is definitely different. It's a change of pace.
Yeah, Spider-Man games and stuff, but cool that I could play an Insomniac game on Game Pass. So if you are listening and you have not played Sunset Overdrive, this is kind of another unique-ish episode. We usually do no spoiler sections and then like that spoiler wall and then full spoilers after that. This game has a story, like by definition, there is a story in the game, but there is really nothing of substance in the story that can be spoiled. It's more of like a carnival of events that happen. Like there's no possible way that I think you can get spoiled on this this game. So we're not going to do the spoiler section in this. We're going to try to keep it like general in the podcast anyway, just because like I don't want to talk shop too much for people who haven't played the game. But we are not going to like dance around like, hey, this is what this boss in the late game looks like. We're not going to dance around that because like, even if you hear it, experiencing it in this game is something completely different. So that's what we're doing today.
Definitely. Definitely going to keep the spoilers light on my end as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So we will start the show, as always, with elevator pitches in case people don't know what Sunset Overdrive is. I say grind, wall run, bounce, vault, and grind.
I was it's the same. It's the same gist. Just keep moving. This is my elevator pitch.
Absolutely. We should probably throw like shoot in there somewhere, but it's all about moving and shooting. This game I played on PC Game Pass. Like I said before, I just played this for the first time. It took me 14 hours to play the main game and both DLCs. The DLCs are included in the version that's on Game Pass at the time of recording here. So where did you play this and how long does a playthrough take you?
I played when it originally came out. I can't tell you how long it took me the first time, but when I played through it again, kind of focusing a little bit more on getting the game done. So I definitely could have taken a little bit more time to grab all the collectibles and stuff, but it took me 10 hours to beat the main story and then two extra hours on the DLCs.
Yeah. So, like, it's right in that sweet spot, I think. Like, I want more games that are, like, 5 to 15 hours long, and this game's right in that sweet spot. You can have your full experience and not have it take up, like, an entire month of game time or something.
Mm-hmm. Longer experiences, like, I like to incorporate Valhalla because it's probably one of the longest, most time-committing games that I've ever attempted to beat. I have not beaten that game. But yeah, long games are wonderful, and it's really exciting to get into those because you're like, yes, this is going to take up, you know, a good amount of my time. I have something to do on my off time and everything like that. But a little bit of a palate cleanser in between with these short and sweet games that are just fun is definitely encouraged for me. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm no stranger to long games either. I just recently beat Baldur's Gate 3, all 100 hours of that. But it is nice to get a, like you said, a palate cleanse. So speaking of, what about Sunset Overdrive first appealed to you the first time you played it? You said you played it at release. So what was interesting about it? And then tell us your history with this game in particular.
I didn't know anything about it until I got it. So when I bought the Xbox, it came as one of those bundle packs. I believe it was this game and also maybe like a Forza or something, another Xbox exclusive. And I figured I'd play it because it was quote unquote free. It came with the Xbox.
Yeah.
Within about an hour of playing the game, though, I knew it was going to be a favorite. I fell in love with the game. It was an arcade game that I didn't know I needed. I had been playing games like, at the time, I was playing Alien Isolation and Shadow of Mordor, two games that take themselves very, very seriously and are completely different genres. So it was nice, a nice, refreshing break from a game that takes itself very seriously to a game that is intended to be there to have fun. And I just had, you know, a smile from ear to ear as I was playing through this and experiencing all the funnies and the gameplay, the fast paced gameplay and everything like that. Replaying it recently, because, you know, we were doing this podcast, I was like, let me get a refresher because I don't know what the game, you know, you get your memory butchers a lot of what a game was, especially if it came out 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But it reminded me of what I loved about this game. And I was surprised that it aged well.
Yeah. Yeah. Before you played it, did you have any other experience with Insomniac stuff before that, like a Ratchet and Clank or something like that?
I grew up on adventure games like that. I grew up on Crash Bandicoot, Ratchet and Clank. My parents were one of the few that didn't allow me to play M for Mature games. So I was pretty much exclusively playing games like Ratchet and Clank and Crash Bandicoot and all those adventure type. What is another one? Jack and Daxter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So those games I definitely grew up on. So this was a welcome addition to those types of games that I had strayed away from since I was able to play other games that were rated M. Definitely went on a binge with the GTAs and the Call of Duties after I turned 17. So yeah, this was a welcome addition to the genre.
Yeah. The contrast, I guess, between playing this and then Alien Isolation, like, I don't think you could pick more opposite games to play back to back.
To be fair, Alien Isolation gave me anxiety. it was not a relaxing, I want to kick back and enjoy my day type of game. It was okay, I'm really enjoying it, but, you know, holy shit, I'm terrified 24/7 as I play through this game. Yeah. So it was definitely a palate cleanser with that.
Yeah, absolutely. For myself, so I had an Xbox 360 and I never got the Xbox One. I kind of skipped that generation. So I'd never heard of this game. It came out in 2014, but I didn't have the console it came out for. I also didn't have a PC, so I never heard about it. Mm-hmm. And the first time I heard about this game was when Hi-Fi Rush got revealed. And suddenly everyone was on Twitter and stuff being like, this looks like Sunset Overdrive. And I was like, this looks like Sunset what? So I looked it up, and when I saw that name, Insomniac, I was like, oh shit, Insomniac made this. They make good games, so I should probably like keep my eye on this. And then I got a PC. Eventually, I got Game Pass. Sunset Overdrive's on Game Pass. And then a friend of the show, Jared, from Play Along Podcast, picked this for me to play on their kind of side series they do, where they bring on a guest. Each person recommends a game to each other that they've never played. They call it Get Wrecked. And Jared recommended Sunset Overdrive to me. I recommended Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin to him. And if anyone's interested, you can go listen to that episode on Play Along Podcast to find out about our thoughts about both of those games. But that was really what got it out of the backlog for me, was Jared being like, all right, Dave, you're playing Sunset Overdrive. And then as the show goes, I can't really play a game that's like 15 hours long and then not do a podcast about it on this show. I don't have enough time to just not do that. So we put it on this show. We got Gooey on the show today. Little opening thoughts here about Sunset Overdrive. First of all, before I get into anything else, you want a game that is just fun to play and move around in and shoot stuff. That is Sunset Overdrive. Super, super fun, satisfying game to do the parkour and grinding and bouncing and, you know, ground pounding and shooting and all of that stuff. It's really, really good. I think this game is a little bit too long and there's some like game design things that started to wear thin. But every time I started to get really tired of playing a game, because I did get into that mode where I was like, man, this game's still going, huh? Every time I started to feel that way, you would get like a really creative boss fight or a mission that was pretty funny or something like that that would pull me back in. So I did end up, of course, finishing the game on the strength of that. Those are just kind of top level opening thoughts here. Oh, and aesthetics like visuals and music are fantastic. What would you say just at the top of the show, opening thoughts?
I wish I could have erased my memory and experienced this game just fresh again. It's one of those games that like really surprises you with the amount of charm that it can bring to the table because of, you know, how much detail. And Insomniac as a development studio has always done this with their games, but I think they did it in a more mature way with this one. They were really straying away from it being a kid's game. So yeah, it was really nice to see comedic things injected in there in the Insomniac fashion, but for adults. The story isn't anything revolutionary, and I don't think it tries to be. It simply sets itself up to make you laugh while also being really aware of the fact that you're playing a video game. The story itself knows that. This is great, but unfortunately the game doesn't completely stray away from feeling repetitive at times, like you mentioned. The gameplay is a nice addition to the experience. It can be simple and to the point, or you can dedicate time to fleshing out the mechanics and the weapons to tailor the experience a little bit more to your liking. And of course, I want to talk about the setting. Really, it's the cherry on top. It has a lot of memorable landmarks, detailed world design, and it's got an excellent use of vibrant colors. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed just, you know, zipping and bouncing and grinding and looking around in the aesthetics of the world. It's super, super satisfying.
Yeah, grind, wall run, bounce, vault, and grind, for sure.
Yes, it's going to be a reoccurring topic, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So we are going to take a little music break, and then when we come back, we will set up the story of Sunset Overdrive. Sunset Overdrive takes place in the year 2027. Very cool. I mean, in 2014, it may have seemed like the not-so-distant future. I always love when video games do this, when it's like, we're taking place in the distant future. We're going to have all of these cool things. And then that's 3 years from now. So this is what we can look forward to in the future. It takes place in Sunset City, where you play as an employee of the Fizco Corporation. And you create a character. It's a pretty fun character creator, I think. Like, this is a really goofy game, so they give you a bunch of goofy clothes and haircuts and stuff like that to give your dude. Like, I had like a nice like white tank top Hawaiian shirt combo on my character with like a pompadour haircut. It's a good time.
Yeah, I had the I think I had a mohawk. I don't know, something that I wouldn't normally do in a game, and some short shorts and, you know, a tank top. But yeah, it's definitely something where, and you know, I was surprised by the variety of the outfit choices as well. I didn't remember how many outfit choices there were. And if you're into that, which personally, I could look like a bag of trash in any game and be totally content with it, but it is a nice addition for people that do enjoy it to collect different outfits and really make their character look unique throughout the entire experience.
Yeah, for sure. You can pick male or female for your character. The voice actors are, for the female voice, it's Stephanie Lemelin, hope I'm saying that correctly, and male voice, Yuri Lowenthal, famous Insomniac voice collaborator. So your nameless character, by the way, your character is nameless. You don't give them a name. And in the game, they comment on the fact that your character doesn't have a name. I forget what they call you. They just call you like player character or something like that whenever a name should pop up or something.
Player one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Your character begins kind of on the run as these people that are consuming this energy drink from Fizco turn into zombies overnight. Like they drank too much. Something's wrong with the drink. So they turn into zombies, and the opening of the game shows your character at work. You're a janitor for the corporation, and shit hits the fan and you run away, and then the story is on, basically. After that, like, again, this is why we're not doing a spoiler section. There's not a lot of like plot to the story. Like, you just go from place to place meeting different groups of survivors, and you're going to take it to the corporation. That's what the story is. And it kind of fits in with the tone of the game too. Like, this, we're punk rock and we're going to stick it to the corporation here.
For sure. For sure. They do have a lot of memorable characters throughout the story, but I 100% agree. I mean, it starts with let's get out of here, and then it ends with let's stay. So you're like, excuse me, like, what do you mean let's stay, let's get out of it? There's no point in trying to follow the plot, but it is definitely an experience trying to figure out what you're gonna see next. I think that was the most exciting part of the game.
Yeah, let's see, like, we have the group of characters that's like a group of LARPers who've set up like their own role-playing kingdom. And this is like, it is like the zombie apocalypse, but it's all in like a goofy comedic tone in this game. Like, this is the least gritty zombie apocalypse story that's ever been told. So you meet like the LARPers, you'll meet like the group of like cheerleaders or something that have like Mexican Day of the Dead face paint and stuff. It's a real smorgasbord of weirdos that you meet. So like, when you're talking about memorable characters, for sure, lots of those.
Mm-hmm. The guy who likes to make entertainment out of everything. I don't know if you remember him. He's up in the tree. He's got this gut. He's like, hey, I want to film you doing crazy stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Is another memorable. It's cool. And the introduction to each character with, they do the same thing that Borderlands did with their boss fights, where they do the cool, you know, freeze frame and zoom in, and you get to see the character name. That I love when games do that. I get a little giddy feeling inside when I see that in a game.
Yeah, this game does a lot of that stuff, like visually. So like, when you meet a new character or when a boss fight comes up, they'll do like that splash screen with like, you know, real stylized. It shows their name and stuff like that. It's also got a bunch of real comic booky stuff. Like, as you play, you hit something and an enemy, there's enemies called poppers, and when they pop, it will say pop up in the air or something like that. Real, real comic booky vibe on top of the other stuff, which we'll talk about in a second, the punk rock side of things.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to see more of that, but I noticed that they added a little bit more of those types of animations in the DLCs. I don't know if you kind of paid attention to that. I wanted to see more of that in the main game, but obviously, you know, they weren't going to make updates to it at the time. It's such an old game now, but it was nice and refreshing to see that they did put more of those types of details within the DLC.
Yeah. Yeah. The DLC probably just had like more of that concentrated stuff, 'cause they are shorter, and like there's more jokes, there's more fighting, there's more everything in the DLCs.
Yeah, for sure.
So like we said, this game doesn't really have a plot that you're following. It's more about moving from group of weirdos and bosses to the next group of weirdos and bosses. So it's kind of more about like this consistent vibe and tone, like throughout it. There's that comic booky goofy meta side of it. Like, the humor is really meta. About video games and pop culture and stuff like that. Like, this game has so many references to like how video games work and like open world RPGs and stuff like that. Like, your character will say stuff like, well, you don't have a floating icon over your head, so how important are you really? Stuff like that. That stuff was pretty funny. They don't do it too often for it to get old, I think.
They definitely hit the sweet spot with the fourth wall breaking and references. They do it enough to where it puts a smile on your face here and there, but it's not like, okay, I get it. You're a video game. Yeah. So it's definitely in the sweet spot for all of the comedic. They have good comedic timing, which I think Insomniac has done really, really well throughout their entire library of games.
Mm-hmm. A lot of pop culture references in the game too, which kind of date the game back in 2014. There's a lot of Breaking Bad references very early in the game where I was like, oh, okay. So we've had like 4 Breaking Bad references in the first 2 hours. Is this just going to be like this the whole time? It wasn't, but there are a lot of those references like throughout the game. So your mileage will vary, I guess, like how funny you think those are. But I think the writing is good enough that most of those land.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we don't know each other too well, but I have like the worst knowledge of pop culture just in general. Like, unless it's a SpongeBob reference or a Shrek reference, it usually goes right over my head. So I'm sure I missed a lot of references, but the video game references, I think, were the most impactful to me. When they, one of them that comes to mind is when he's talking to somebody and they're having him do, you know, different things. And he's like, oh, the rule of three, because usually when you do a quest, you have to do whatever it is 3 times. And they know their audience when it comes to that type of stuff. So they hit the mark on those things. As far as other pop culture references and stuff like that, I'm sure I missed a billion of them.
Yeah, there's a lot. And it wouldn't surprise me if there was like a SpongeBob or something like that reference around. Like, you do fight a giant sea creature at one time. So I'm sure there is something. The other kind of side of this game's tone is, like I mentioned before, I think punk rock is a big influence on the game's writing, on the game's soundtrack, on the characters that you meet. There's a lot of like irreverent, you know, jokey, slacker, like stick it to the man type of attitude in the game, especially from your main character, who is just like a sarcastic joker asshole, basically.
That's a great way to describe it. Sarcastic joker asshole, but like in lovable sarcastic joker asshole.
Yeah, your main character is like, this is another thing that I guess like I would be kind of picky about. Like, this is a thin line to walk. Like, video games trying to be funny is tough, I think. Like, there's a lot of games, for me personally, Borderlands is one of these where it's just too much. I can't take it. And there's a lot of games that like try to be funny or do comic relief, and it's just like not as good for whatever reason. There's something about interactivity in video games or like the quality of writing in a lot of video games that just doesn't hit the same level of comedy that a TV show might or something like that. But I think Sunset Overdrive does it pretty well. And I think it really starts with your main character. She is where a lot of those meta references come from, a lot of those pop culture references, or just commenting on like the people you meet, how people treat each other, like the ridiculous situations that you get in, but also having like this fuck the man type of, you know, attitude, or in this game specifically, fuck this corporation. I mean, obviously fuck them because they ruined the world in this story, but also like that's probably how he felt before the game started too.
Yeah, you can tell the tone is definitely set from the beginning where, you know, your character is, I believe, picking up trash. And they're not doing it enthusiastically. They are not enjoying their job by any means. So this whole end of the world thing is almost a theme that I feel goes not only with your character, but with every character that you meet. Everybody has a fresh start. It's not like everyone's lives were amazing before the, you know, end of the world per se, or end of this town. Because they don't really reference or say anything about what's going on in the rest of the world.
No, not really.
No, just in Sunset City, everybody that you meet somehow, some way benefited from everything going to shit, which is really funny because they do show certain situations that are fucked up. And you're like, damn, that's not a good situation to be in. But somehow the character turns around and looks at the camera and is smiling and is like, yeah, I'm having a great time. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's definitely like if you're one of those people who like if you watch or play a zombie apocalypse story and you need people to be taking the situation seriously, then like you're not going to like how they handle this story because nothing is taken seriously, really. Like there's a couple characters that die, but like it's not a sad moment in the story. Like there's still jokes going on then too. So it is really just like a goof fest throughout. The punk rock vibes, I think, are also felt like right from the get-go when you first boot up the game, this power chord rock or like pop punk type stuff starts playing. And so the soundtrack like throughout the game really backs up like the vibe of the writing and the characters too. I don't know if you like this kind of music, but this is what I grew up on. Like very formative era in music for me, like the Green Day, Bowling for Soup, Newfound Glory type stuff. And this soundtrack like really hit that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a big reason why, oh my gosh, you mentioned the game and I'm blanking on it for some reason. The game that a lot of people were referencing.
Oh, Hi-Fi Rush.
Hi-Fi Rush. Thank you. I'm so sorry. I blanked on that. But I think this is one of the biggest reasons why it was compared to Hi-Fi Rush is because it hits a lot of the same genres when it comes to the music and the sound development throughout the entire game doesn't get old. It kind of goes with like, you know, it's an adventure and you go out and it's fast pace and the music really, really, really complements the fast pace of the gameplay and the combat and moving through the city.
Yeah, I'm basically like I have the music taste where I think I could just listen to like three chord, like power chord rock for hours, basically, you know, and there's songs that have vocals and stuff like that too. But there are songs that play when you are just like grinding around the city and stuff like that, that are just like these repeated three chord structures from, you know, the pop punk that I grew up listening to. So like, as soon as that started, I'm right at home. It really reminded me of like that one album by The Hives that got famous back in the day. Just like, it's not a sound that you hear in video games very often. So like when I booted it up, I was just so happy. Like, you know, hit me with some power chords. You're just going to tap right into like my nerve center. It's great.
Yeah. And I can't sit. So I'm not a big music junkie. I know it's crazy to think about. My genres range from anything really, from classic music to rock to metal to it could be in the background and I won't pay attention too much to it. But I think what is so special about the soundtrack in this particular game is that even if that's not really your, you know, go-to music genre, it goes so well with the vibe and the aesthetics and with the setting that it really does set it up to be just this fun vibe.
Yeah. At best, you're going to connect at it. Like you're going to connect with it on a level like I did. At worst, you're going to be like, oh yeah, this complements the vibe of everything else about the game, which is
absolutely,
you mean that by itself is already a compliment for a video game soundtrack. So it's cool. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about like the story or like the vibe or writing or anything like that. We've already kind of established this is a goofy time. It's like a theme park ride of, like I said, weirdos and cool creative bosses and stuff like that. And one-liners and jokes and stuff along the way. But, you know, I'm not sure that it's like a real criticism or like a ding on the game to say that the story has no substance. I don't think that's the point. Like, I don't think they were trying to do that. And I think that when Insomniac tries to do that, I know that they can because the Spider-Man games do that. They write good stories in those games. Mm-hmm. So I just don't think that was a point of emphasis for them. And so it's not really a point of emphasis for me either.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, just thinking about it now that you kind of planted that bug in my head, I can't think of what the story was for Ratchet and Clank, the new one that came out
Right.
There's a bad guy and you're chasing something for some reason, but the entire experience of the game is what really makes the game memorable. The mm-hmm. when you walk into a or you go travel to a new planet and you get to look around and the planet is just, you know, fills you with awe. Things like that is what Insomniac, I think, strives for in these types of games. That's how they make these games memorable, not through their storytelling techniques.
Yeah, and gameplay also. So let's listen to a little bit more of that music, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the gameplay in Sunset Overdrive.
We're gonna have a party, fuck you. I can't think of nothing better to do. Do you wanna party with me? We're all about to die, baby, you'll see. We're gonna have a party, eat shit. We're all about to die, submit the best of it. Do you wanna party? Let's go. Don't you wanna die with people you know?
Sunset Overdrive is an open-world third-person shooter, basically. But before we talk about open world design or combat, we need to talk about movement, because that's the point. That was the elevator pitch of this game, was, grind, wall run, bounce, vault, and grind. That is the point of this game, is movement. They've created a movement system where you grind on rails throughout the city, you can wall run, you can swing from bars and jump, you can do wall jumps, you can bounce on stuff, you can do super jumps. It's all like you have so many things that you can do. And then the joy of this game is stringing these together. And basically, like, you can play this game like the floor is lava for, you know, minutes at a time. And it's just like really fun. So just like setting that baseline that like moving in this game is super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. The movement is cool because it works as expected.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
You know that cars are not bouncy. I know that cars are not bouncy. And yet I aim for cars when I'm trying to fall down because I know that they will be bouncy in this game. So
yeah, exactly.
The amount of bounciness is just, it's fun. And it really does work flawlessly. I never encountered a piece of the game where I was trying to do something and it didn't work and I got frustrated because of it. For the most part, the reaction of everything that you wanted to, like all of the buttons that you were pressing, they all worked really, really well. And I think they perfected the movement in this game. And that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, so we talk about this, like you're grinding, you're wall running, you're bouncing, you're vaulting, all of these like complicated verbs that you're doing. But like you said, they work as expected and they're easy to do. Like wall running is easy. You press one button when you're near a wall, your dude will start running. You press one button when you're getting up to a ledge and your dude will vault over it. You press one button to grind. You don't have to balance when you grind. This isn't Tony Hawk. It's just, it's all set up in a way to be easy. It's all set up in a way like the world design is set up so that you can keep doing this forever. Like this is not a world that is designed with realism in mind. It's designed so that you can grind forever, basically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Which is really fun. It's really fun to think about. And you mentioned Tony Hawk, and I totally blanked, but I did think at one point, this is like a diet version of a Tony Hawk. Like you have your combos and stuff that you can do as you traverse through the world, and they're not nearly as difficult, but it definitely has the same feel to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like that endless feel of stringing together combos and stuff like that. The only thing missing is if they gave you a score for, well, they do give you a score. You get like a style score.
Style points. Yeah.
I never really paid attention to that. It helps you in gameplay. Like I think maybe you do more damage or unlock like higher level abilities or something if your style is higher.
Yes. So if you have, I forget how many levels at this point, but the more you build your style, the more amps are activated and your amps that you have in your weapons will, you know, do more damage and or whatever abilities you have. There's so many of them that you really can't, you know, narrow it down to one thing. But for example, if you have a weapon that has an amp on it that eventually starts freezing enemies, it will not be active until your style points hit a certain amount.
Right. And amps, for people who didn't play, are little customizable things you can attach to either your weapons, or there are amps that you just like put on your character, basically. Yes. So think of them as rings or something like that. I don't know. But Yeah, so good point. You are incentivized to build up that style, and the only way to build up the style meter is to keep grinding, wall running, vaulting, all of that, and stringing those things together. That's one way they encourage you to keep doing this, like always be using these movement mechanics. The other way they encourage this, actually, there's two more ways. The second way they encourage this is you run super slow, like on the ground, and you don't have a sprint button. So anytime you hit the ground in this game, you're like, ugh, so slow. Let me get back up on those rails.
For sure. There was absolutely no way in hell you would catch me running somewhere because of this mechanic alone, which, again, isn't a bad thing because you can tell the intention was to push you to use the grind and the bounce to traverse.
Yeah, and it's great. Like, it's satisfying. It's fun. Like, even when you're grinding on rails, like, or like on telephone wires and stuff, like, you've got a grind where you hang from the telephone wire and then you can flip yourself up on top, and they've scattered collectibles all over the place. Like, you collect like people's shoes that are hanging from telephone wires. So as you're going around, you always have stuff to look out for. If you're into collectibles, you can do that, you know, as a lot of Insomniac games do. And this also, I didn't fast travel like ever in this game because I just had a lot of fun using these traversal abilities, just like in the Spider-Man games. I don't fast travel in those games either because it's just fun to move around. So they really mastered this. And, you know, this game came out before any of those Spider-Man games.
Yeah, and the ability to fast travel is usually a very welcome mechanic for me in any game. I'm like, oh, thank goodness there's fast travel. Never felt like that in this game. I was like, oh, cool, there's fast travel. Forgot about it immediately and went on with, you know, bouncing on cars and boats and whatever else I could bounce on. So definitely a welcome mechanic, but not necessary in a game like this.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's always like a kind of feather in the cap for games that have fast travel. But if I find myself not using it, it means I'm having fun with something else or I'm engaged by something else in the game. Like, Red Dead Redemption 2 is another one. I didn't even know you could fast travel. And I played that entire game like 1.5 times. And then I did the podcast about it. And my guest was like, yeah, I use the fast travel sometimes. So I was like, what? You can fast travel? I didn't even notice. Because I was so engaged with the game world that they made that like I didn't need it. Same here in this game.
Yeah, it's either one of the two. It's either you're so engaged by the exploration and things to do and or the traversal, like in the Spider-Man games or this game, is just so fun that you don't feel the need to fast travel.
I'm glad that you brought up like those two types of, I guess, engagement with open worlds. We did an episode on Tales from the Backlog a year ago or like 2 years ago now. It's been too long. I don't remember at this point. But we did an episode about different kinds of open worlds and how like some open worlds you are really engaged by exploring and getting rewarded for exploring, like Elden Ring or something like that. And then there's other ones where like the exploring is not worth it. Like, it's not really worth it to go out of your way and be like, hey, I wonder what's like under that staircase. There's nothing under the staircase. So don't even try. But it's fun to be in those worlds because traversal is super fun. And we talked about that in that episode a lot. And one of the games that we brought up as an example of like bad or unsatisfying exploration, but fun open world is Spider-Man, because it's just fun to move in that game. And so I'm putting Sunset Overdrive like squarely in that category. You will not be rewarded for exploring off the beaten path in Sunset Overdrive. You don't even really have to. The only things that you can find out there are some places where you find side quests, some places where they have like challenges, like movement challenges, or like, you know, hey, speed run these two city blocks, like follow this path and see if you can do it in 15 seconds. Like, you'll find challenges like that, but those are marked by huge glowing icons that tell you that it's there. Like, you don't find those by exploring. You'll just be moving around and be like, oh my God, there's a giant green thing, a traversal challenge. We'll go check that out. It's that kind of game. Did you do any of these challenges?
I did, just for the sake of it. By no means am I a completionist, so I never felt like I had to do them all. But in order to experience the entire game, I like to do one or two of everything. They also brought the challenges of, they introduced the challenges of trying to get the most points for the gentleman that wants to film you doing crazy shit. So he'll tell you, hey, kill the OD by doing this. And you have to like follow that prompt. And those were fun as well, but I didn't feel the need to, nor was it like, I wouldn't level up if I didn't do these things. It was just there because it, if you like to complete these types of things, you can, but if you don't, you don't have to. So that was a nice addition too.
Yeah, agreed. That's kind of how I did it too. Like I did all the different kinds of challenges at least like one or two times. I didn't do a lot of the combat arena challenges because they're the exact same type of combat that you do in all the main quests. So I was like, I'm not itching for more of this. But I did do a lot of the timed movement challenges and like that high score challenge, like you said. Those were fun because like it's like, oh, we're putting coins on all of these rails and you grind around and pick up the coins. And like my gamer brain is just like having a field day with stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So those are fun. I obviously didn't do all of them. I'm not a completionist either, but I had a good time.
Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned, exploration is definitely not, it's not rewarded. There's big markers in the city and throughout the game that are really detailed and great to stop and look at. Definitely very memorable. But the smaller areas where, you know, usually you would want to look into to see if there's any loot behind, those don't exist. They're definitely just there to pass by and not stop if to see if there's anything in there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't consider getting all of the shoes and the toilet paper, which are essentially upgrade materials. I wouldn't consider those necessarily exploration based. I would say, if anything, they make it feel like more of a collect-a-thon.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, I already said I'm not fast traveling, so I will take 5 minutes and grind across the entire city. And while I'm doing that, I'll find like three of these, you know, lamp posts that are toilet papered and like five pairs of shoes. So I'll just collect those on the way. But I don't need to go out of my way to like try and get all of them. There's an obscene amount of collectibles if you want to try and get everything. And they are upgrade materials, like you said, but this game, number one, is not that hard. And number two, it gets hard sometimes, but like not usually. And number two, like if you just, you know, you're going from quest to quest and you see a toilet paper thing, just grab that. Don't worry about finding everything. You'll end up with enough materials to upgrade enough stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I never felt the need to grind. Well, I guess to grind out materials, definitely felt the need to grind.
Yeah, but always.
not to sit there and try to find everything. There's certain games that will do that just to add length to them, which in my opinion does not add value to the game. It just adds a, okay, great, now I got to do this chore. If you want to do so, it's there and it's available and it'll definitely make the combat easier. In certain areas, it is a little bit challenging, but it's by no means necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, rest in peace to all the 1000 gamer score sickos out there when they play this game, because there's a lot of stuff to collect, but that's not me. So I got enough of those things, just the way
definitely, definitely. We're on the same boat on that one.
Yeah. Combat in Sunset Overdrive, like you said, again, it's third-person shooter, and you're fighting often against hordes of enemies. It's either the zombies that they call the OD in the game, human enemies that they call scabs, and then later they introduce these FizTech security robots that go out and patrol the city. And since you're fighting a lot of them, the third kind of way that they incentivize you to use those movement abilities is that if you are standing still or you're just running on the ground, you'll get killed like really fast. You actually can't take that many hits in this game. But when you're grinding or jumping or something like that, you basically rarely get hit. Sometimes they'll throw stuff on like the rails you're grinding on. You have to jump off before you hit them or something like that. But you are really incentivized to always be moving using those movement abilities. So this turns out to be like kind of frenetic. Sometimes it's like action packed. You're always moving. You're always jumping. Like things are always exploding nearby. Like it gets pretty hectic. But again, if you are using those movement abilities, I actually didn't think this game was that hard most of the time.
Yeah, I didn't struggle with it. I personally don't think I died at all in the main story. I died a couple of times on the DLC. I thought the DLC was a little bit harder, if not a lot harder than the main game. Maybe they did that on purpose because they heard feedback, or maybe they just wanted it to take a little bit longer since the DLC was going to be a shorter experience. But I did not struggle with the main game whatsoever, and definitely struggled during the DLC.
Yeah, the second DLC in particular, I died many times. I failed a lot of missions in that. It's a significant step up in challenge for sure. But the main game, I probably died, you know, 5 to 10 times in 10 hours or something. So not a huge level of challenge. That's not really the point. They want you to have fun, get in that flow state in this game.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I think that makes this combat system enjoyable, because I think there's a lot of repetition in the gameplay, which I'll talk about. The only thing that kept it enjoyable for me, and this is a good thing about the game, is your weapons are creative and varied, and you get a lot of them. I think, you know, I'm imagining the weapon wheel in my head. There's got to be like 10 or 12 weapons you can carry at a time. Like, a lot of stuff, and they're all varied. This felt to me like Ratchet and Clank DNA in this game. You know, Ratchet and Clank also big on like varied, colorful, cartoony weapons. And this has a lot of stuff along those lines too.
Yeah, for sure. Weapon variety is to me what made this game so engaging.
Yeah.
With the movement being such an integral part of the combat, you pair it with various different types of weapons, and it kind of prevents the repetitive nature of the game, like fighting hordes of zombies, from becoming really stale.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoyed the addition of enemy weaknesses against certain weapon types, which is my theory on why I think the DLC was so much harder, because, you know, you're fighting different types of enemies, and whatever weapons you've been perfecting through this time, you've used on OD. So the weapons that I had in particular were not effective against the robots. And I was sitting there taking a lot longer to kill those guys and hordes of those guys than I would with the OD. But the weapon variety in general added a layer of intricacy to the combat that you could capitalize on to make the fighting slightly easier, but you could also ignore, which was another one of those. If you really want to take advantage of everything that this game has to offer, you can, but you don't have to in order to be able to progress.
Yeah, there are enemies that are like weak to fire, and you'll get like 3 weapons that do fire damage. You'll get electric weapons, ice weapons, and then you'll get a bunch that just do, you know, you get your first weapon that you start out with is just like a pistol, basically. But it's really good, and I used it the whole game because it does like some of the most like DPS of anything that you pick up. But then you pick up a bunch of stuff that has like very specific use cases. You get a bunch of AoE weapons. I really like the weapon that's like a vinyl record launcher, and like the records bounce from enemy to enemy. And like, you know, if you're fighting those poppers that die in one hit, they run up and get close to you, and they do this big pop explosion and hurt you a lot. But if you use that record launcher, it'll bounce and just take them all out in just a couple of shots. Super fun. I also liked the fire shotgun, which I think was called like the fiery compensator was the name for it.
Yeah. And it looked like a penis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was trying to remember that. But I remember Jared saying that when I talked with him about the game. But yeah, the name makes sense for sure.
Yeah.
And one of my other favorites was the explosive teddy bear launcher, which is like this game's grenade launcher, but it's a goofy game. So exploding teddy bears.
My personal favorites, and I went a little bit crazy with this. I don't know why, but I min-maxed my like you know, time to kill all the zombies. And I don't remember. I'm going to butcher the names because I can't for their life remember what the names of each of the weapons were. But yeah, the one where you shoot out a stuffed animal that creates like an acid AOE. I used the freeze bomb, the overcompensator, which was like a penis. Of course, that's the only one who I remember the name of because I have the humor brain of a toddler. And then the pistol, the starting pistol I used throughout the game as well. So I would start with the freeze bombs and I would get everyone frozen, nice and ready to die. Mm-hmm. I would throw in some acid teddies and it adds dots to the enemies as well. I would then set them all on fire with the compensator and finish off the bigger ones with the pistol, which does more damage to the OD if they're on fire. So you can definitely combo and really tailor the fighting experience to be something where you can min-max if you want to. I loved that aspect of the game. I had a lot of fun, you know, comboing different types of weapons, seeing what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. I didn't get that deep into it, which explains why I probably died more often than you did in the game. But I did have fun, like, just kind of playing this as like, oh, someone's far away, pull out that pistol and shoot from far away. If they're up close, use the shotgun. You know how video game weapons work. So I'm just going to follow those rules that have stood the test of time, basically. But then there's those goofy weapons too, like the exploding teddy bear or the record launcher or like the turret gun that like puts up like drone turrets, basically. That helped out a lot. Cause you'll get in like every combat scenario is like you versus like 200 enemies or more. So you really need stuff that can like do AoEs or bounce around to different enemies. So like you said that the freeze bomb does like an AOE freeze and then AOE pools of acid and stuff like that. So that's really what you want. And then every now and then they'll throw out one of these like big, strong enemies that you can't really fight with the same strategy as the smaller ones. And so that's when you need to pull out like the, okay, use the fire shotgun, set them on fire, then use the pistol or use the exploding teddy bears and stuff like that. So they do get you to mix up the weapon you're using. You'll also run out of ammo and be forced to switch weapons pretty often.
Yes, absolutely. I do like the ammo collection system. It adds another layer of incentivization of going out and trying to actually fight them with the melee weapon because you'll find a lot of boxes near the enemies and stuff like that.
Yeah, you have a melee weapon that you pick up. And if something's just right up in your face, you can bash them. You can do that while you're grinding too. Like, should go without saying, you can shoot and everything while you're grinding or while you're in midair and stuff like that. But the other thing is like, you can do with your melee weapon, you can do this ground pound, which will kill a bunch of things in an AOE. And then after you do the ground pound, you can do like a super bounce back up in the air and then keep the movement chain going. So like, it's just like a flow state. When you get in the flow state, even in combat, it can be really satisfying. You feel like nothing can touch you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's funny to think about that too, because once it's interrupted, it's such a big, feeling when,
it's
you know,
like the record scratch. Like,
yeah,
when
exactly.
You get hit.
What's going on here? What happened right there? Like if you miss a bounce or you think something's going to bounce and you land on it and you just kind of slump down. So it just kind of puts into perspective how important movement is with pairing it with a combat.
Yeah. So that is the first layer of bread in the compliment sandwich that I have for the combat and like the gameplay in Sunset Overdrive. The middle part of the compliment sandwich is the missions in this game that they send you on, like the combat encounter design, we'll say. Mission design and encounter design is not varied enough for how long the game is. There's like three kinds of missions in the game, and it took me 14 hours to play. The last DLC really mixed up the gameplay to a point where I was like, what the fuck even is this right now? When you like, you're not even a person anymore, and it's super fun. But it's either like, okay, you're doing a mission. You go to this place and there's a bunch of OD and you need to kill all the OD. Or you're riding on a vehicle and you need to protect it. Or you have these tower defense missions for like your main quest giver, Floyd. And I don't like tower defense in general, like in any video game. These in particular, I was like groan out loud every time they brought one up. It's because it's like they give you these traps and you go around and set up your traps and you're trying to protect the vat where like the OD juice is that all the zombies want and shit. But I don't know, something about it. It's like you do it once and then the second one comes up and it's exactly the same as the first one. And then you go to a new place and you do the third one. It's exactly the same as the second and first one. And I was like, oh man, this stinks. It's just a lack of variety in the things that you're doing. Cause every combat is basically the same. You're fight. There's, I don't know, 10 enemy types between humans, OD, and robots. Mm-hmm. And there's dozens of them in every combat encounter. So like, it's fun to do the combat. It's fun to move around, but you are doing the same thing the whole game, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely introduced the gist of the game within the first, I would say, 2 hours, if that. And I completely agree that mission variety is not something they put a whole lot of thought into. But I think what saves it for me is mm-hmm. that the characters you meet throughout the story are super charming. What is essentially that there's a point in the game, this is the most spoilery I probably will get, where it's essentially just an escort mission, and that's with the LARPers, the crazy LARPers, because they do mention that they are insane and they think that the LARPing has become the real life. Mm-hmm. But I hate escort missions, and it's essentially an escort mission. You have to take these guys and they have to gather food for their community or whatever. It was still worth experiencing, even though I'm not a fan of escort missions whatsoever, because those role-playing nerds were insane. The bard is singing a really funny song, if you're paying attention to what he's saying. Gets killed midway through the mission. They're like, wait, what happened to the music? Oh, he's dead. You know, stuff like that mm-hmm. really saved the game in parts where the gameplay lacked a lot of variety.
Yeah. There were a couple points when I started to question, you know, like you do gaming streams and YouTube videos and stuff like that. Like, I'm sure that sometimes you get this thought where you're like, am I doing this because I'm going to make something? I'm going to do a podcast on it. So I need to beat the game. But if I wasn't doing it for the podcast, would I keep playing? Maybe not. Like, I had that thought with this game, because I think you're exactly right. Like, if you play this game for 2 hours, you'll get it. You get what the game is about. There might be some weapons or like a movement ability or two that you won't get until later in the game, but you'll understand Sunset Overdrive after a couple hours. But the thing that helped was just how fun it is to move around. And then I think I said at the beginning of the show, I feel like every time I really got in that mode where it was like, all right, I'm going to play this for like, I'm just going to do one more mission and then turn it off. I'm going to play something that I want to play more than Sunset Overdrive. And then I would get to a boss fight or some big set piece moment that are really fun. And it like pulled me back out of it. I think as far as combat goes, the boss fights are the star in Sunset Overdrive. They're super fun. They're really imaginative. Again, absolutely zero sense of reality in their design or anything like that. It's just like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if you did a boss fight against a blimp or some shit like that? And so every time I got in those doldrums of like, man, these missions suck. Man, I just did 5 missions in a row where it's like, go here, kill 200 enemies and come back. Then you get a boss fight that's really, really fun. And it just like gets that spirit back in. At least it did for me.
It's almost like they knew that this was happening. It's almost like they put in filler missions in between the really fun set pieces because maybe they were trying to lengthen the game a little bit. Yeah. You know, they were working with Microsoft. This was their big heavy hitter for Microsoft for the release of the Xbox One. And I'm sure there was a lot of expectations behind this game. I'm really glad that they didn't give up their artistic integrity for this game. You can tell they did put a lot of detail into, for example, the animations. Something as small as when you run out of ammo in a specific gun, instead of it just saying no ammo, you actually shoot out a white flag.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm out of ammo. And stuff like that, that makes me believe that Insomniac didn't just put it out just to put it out to be a shell of a game. But like you said, in those moments where you're just like, oh my gosh, why are they having me just go back to this area, back to just shooting hordes of zombies again? Those definitely felt like filler.
Yeah. And I definitely got the sense when I was playing where I was like, this game is too long. If you ask them, they would be like, we have 8 hours of really quality content in this game, but the game's 14 hours. But luckily, again, every time I got into one of those, you know, mindsets where I didn't really want to play, I got one of the boss fights or like a fun character mission or something like that, that just kind of saved it. So I wrote down a couple of my favorite boss fights, and like, we can just like describe, like, keep in mind, all the boss fights are based around this movement where you're grinding on rails. Sometimes they're suspended in midair. Like, there's no realism here. Bouncing on these bounce pads and stuff against these like oversized, huge zombies. So there's one where you're like grinding and chasing a dragon around the city. And it's really fun because the dragon's like weaving in these streets and stuff, and you're using all of like the telephone wires and bouncing on cars and stuff to keep up. And then you jump on the dragon's back and grind on its back up to its head so you can like actually do damage to it. Stuff like that is really imaginative, and it like kind of contrasts like the lack of imagination in the other missions. It felt like it was like all like the creative shit went into the boss fights, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. Stuff like that was really cool because it's a big set piece, and it reminds me of what they're doing with the Spider-Man games. Set pieces are like some of the most memorable things in those games, and they definitely incorporated a lot of that in this game as well. And it's crazy to think about because they're doing the same thing 10 years later, and it gets bigger and better and bolder, and the graphics get more powerful and everything like that, but it has the same feel to it.
Yeah, for sure. In this game, like, I guess we'll put a pin in graphics. Did you have any favorite boss fights or any where you were like just really stuck out to you?
There were so many. The one that sticks out to me, and this is just because of, I think it's a very biased thing, right? But the balloon sticks out to me, not necessarily because I thought it was the funnest gameplay wise, but I love that the balloon was cussing me out the entire time. And it's supposed to be like this kid friendly, you know, nice fizzy balloon that makes you want to drink their drink, but instead he's like, fuck you, I fucking hate you.
Like so a little kid mascot. I'm
definitely a sucker for a good gritty piece of commentary, or comedy and commentary. Yeah, both go hand in hand. So that was my favorite, just because I was laughing the whole time.
Yeah, that one was fun. There's one where you're fighting like on an actual roller coaster track. So like doing the grinding on a roller coaster track is cool. Mm-hmm. In the DLC, there's one where you fight a giant crab monster that I thought was a ton of fun. Just like a fucking kaiju of like a crab lobster thing. Super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was really good. They fleshed out the mechanics by then, and it was done really well. It was fun.
Yeah, for sure. But we mentioned visuals there for a second. So like you said, like Insomniac's really good at set pieces. They are pushing the boundaries of like realistic graphics in their new games. This game is not going for realism. And I think that's one of the reasons why the visuals have held up so much since 2014. It's really stylized. Like I got the comparison in my head of Arkane Studios characters. Like if people out there, or if you have played Dishonored or Prey or something like that, like they don't make people that look like real people. They're very stylized. This game's like that too. Like everyone looks like a caricature kind of, and they're not going for that like super high fidelity look to it. Like it's kind of cartoony, even though it is kind of realistic, but it's like super colorful and everything. The style's cool.
Yeah, for sure. The Arkane stylized cartoon look definitely prevented it from aging poorly.
Yeah.
Not sure if it was ported and up-resed to PC. Do you happen to know?
4K, so like
it looked fantastic. It's at least possible,
I wasn't sure,
but like if I didn't know any better and someone told me this game came out recently, I would not have questioned it. I would have been like, yeah, that looks like it came out sometime in 2023. You know what I mean? Yeah. So definitely think it was up-resed.
Yeah, the games that go for like that perfect realism, those are the ones that age the most. Even though like there's not that much of a difference between some like early Xbox One, PS4 games and games that come out today, like the graphical leap between there is not that big, but you can notice it in, you know, well, some of those games are not even available in 4K. Rest in peace, Bloodborne. But the
that hurts the soul, man.
Yes, oh, it does. Yeah, but the stylized like look to it makes stuff like this timeless. And the other part of that is like it's bright, it's colorful. We talked about that. Lots of like I would say like orange is the dominant color in this game.
Yeah, for sure.
Orange and yellow and like light blue and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. And another thing that they did right, in my opinion, was the lighting. Although yeah. it wasn't too necessary because of how bright the game is, and it definitely shines during the day. There were missions. I think the missions dictated, or the part of the story that you were in dictated whether or not it was day or nighttime. But yeah. During the nighttime set pieces, there was really awesome highlights of certain areas of the map that used lighting, like the neon lights. And the blimps and the balloons were all, you know, lit up. It was, they used it very, very effectively.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other thing I have to mention that we already touched on a little bit is the animation in the game and all of the care that went into keeping things varied. You mentioned the out of ammo, like shooting out the white flag, but the thing that I got the most enjoyment out of was the animations for fast travel. And then when you die and respawn, they're just so good. So the fast travel one, I think there's only one, but your character drinks some of the Fizco drink and just passes the fuck out and then black screen. And then you wake up in the spot you fast travel to, which is very like, he doesn't like lay down gracefully. He just falls flat on his face and it's very slapstick and funny.
Oh, yeah. I think there was two fast travel animations, depending on what you used. There's one where you come out of a portable toilet and he's like, oh, and you can see him holding his stomach. So another like just amusing thing. And I think you sent me the death animation response.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I was happy to find that.
Yeah. However long the video was, I watched the entire thing and it's so cool to see how much they put into this game, how much love and how much passion went behind every little detail.
Yeah. So when you die and are respawned, and it should be noted, like when you die, you just like pick up right in the middle of your mission most of the time. Like you sometimes have to restart from a checkpoint, but sometimes it doesn't feel that way. Like you just pick up right where you died. But they have these animations that are just so good. And there's like 40 of the fucking things. Like someone really had fun designing these. So for example, like one where you rise up out of a grave and you're a zombie and he walks like a Frankenstein zombie and then like snaps out of it. There's one where you're like a shapeless lump of flesh and then like these two like factory molds come in and smash you together and then like your character pops out of it. Like just a couple of examples. Just really fun. Like, so maybe you died and you're like, fuck, I died. Like that sucks. I get a restart from a checkpoint or something, but then you see the animation where like your dude crashes down from space in a rocket ship and like stumbles out of the rocket. You're like, well, I can't be that mad. That's great.
Yeah. That absolutely happened to me. Like I mentioned, I didn't die during the main game. So my very first death was one of those silly animations. And I was like, huh, I'm not even mad. Like I want to go die again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I was watching your stream of the last DLC when you were like, wait, what was that animation, that respawn?
Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't gotten to experience those and it just adds an extra layer of, okay, I'm going to maybe go die a bunch of times just so I can see different animations.
Yeah. There's another one that I thought was really funny where of a bunch of the OD zombies are driving a van and they just like pull up and they just toss your character out the side of the van and then drive away. It's really good.
It's so fun. That's a great one. That's that's a really well thought out one.
Yeah, this is like, you know, I love it when you play a game, or I think it's more evident in games for me personally, or maybe in like a comedy, like a sitcom, where you can imagine writers and animators in a room together being like, all right, more funny respawn animations, give them to me. And they just like, you can just imagine everyone having a blast designing these things. And there's a lot of stuff in Sunset Overdrive that gives me that feeling.
Yeah. And very few games have the ability to not take themselves seriously. So when they were writing out those types of things, the respawn animations, or even to keep it, you know, light on the spoiler section, certain points of the story in the game where things happen where they break the fourth wall, like egregiously, know that somebody was like, hey, you know, let's try this. And when they said, let's do it, they were like, what? You're going to let me do this to this game? Are you serious? So yeah, it definitely had some moments where I was like, okay, this is cool. I like this game. This is allowing the writers to have a lot of fun with it, and they're not taking it too seriously.
Yeah. One thing along those lines is around the town, you'll find these TVs that are playing this TV channel called Sunset TV. And it's the former community manager at Insomniac is the guy on the screen, like doing that TV show. And they do a very funny, like egregious fourth wall break later in the game with that guy that was like, when it happened, I was like, this is very, very funny. And again, like, you can tell they're having the best time writing and designing, and then this guy performing these things.
Yeah. You can really see the amount of love they had when they were putting things into this game, when they were writing for it and animating for it. It made me love Insomniac even more than I already do. I don't think that they could probably put out any sort of game and it could be the weirdest idea ever, and I would be like, yes, I want to play that game. I will definitely enjoy that game.
Yeah, 100%. So I think this brings us into our final section here, where we just kind of wrap up our thoughts and then answer the question, who would you recommend Sunset Overdrive to?
So I would say, I'm going to kind of do this backwards. I'm going to answer the question first.
Okay.
You mentioned you didn't love the Borderlands games. I think that some are better than others. I'm a big fan of the first one. I loved the introduction to that type of like comedy genre in video games in the first Borderlands game. It'll always have a special place in my heart. So if you loved the Borderlands games, and not just for the looter shooter portions of the gameplay portions, but because they have charm and great comedic value, then I would recommend this game to you. The fourth wall breaking is fun throughout the entire game. It's really emphasized in the end as well. The art design and animations were detailed and were hit out of the park. The sound design is super satisfying, even in the menus, like not just the soundtrack, but in the menus when you're scrolling through different things, sound design is done really well. Mm-hmm. And although a good portion of the game can feel repetitive and drags a bit, it's worth experiencing for the few unique missions, like I don't know if you remember the Leech's missions.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Stuff like that. you mentioned it and you put it together really well. Like the breaks where you're just like, okay, I'm no longer tired of the repetitive nature. I want to see what else there is to see in this game. And of course, the character dialogue and fun boss fights are just cherries on top in the entire experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think this game has like a pretty easy pitch to a lot of people. Like, it's charming, it's funny, it's irreverent, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. But under all of that kind of like not taking it seriously in the story, like the gameplay design I think is really good. And like I think the things that they emphasized the most were setting up this movement system, making fun boss fights and set pieces. And they did that really, really well. So like we've said, it's a really fun game to play. It's a good game to like get into a flow state and just kind of chill vibe. Enjoy the music that's going on as you're playing. I did have some issues with like the way combat scenarios and missions were designed. Again, that like brought me, like brought tedium into a game that like tedium should not exist in a game like this. So I do think this game's a little bit too long, but the recommendation is still pretty easy. Like, I think that this is a game that I like, a lot of people are just going to pick up and be like, oh yes, this is really fun. Like, this is engaging. It's satisfying. It's what you want, like in a game like this, that's movement based and, you know, fighting hordes of enemies and stuff. I do think that like you could just like install this on Game Pass, play it for a couple hours and be like, yeah, I get it. I understand what this game's about. Like, I don't think you need to beat this game, but if you do jump out early, you will miss some of like my favorite boss fights and set pieces and stuff from the later game. And especially the two DLCs were full of really memorable stuff, stuff we haven't talked about in too much detail. Not that it would like ruin your experience to get spoiled, but like, to me, it would be like a very surface level, like, hey, you remember that time when this happened? And yeah, that was fun. But like, there's not a lot of depth to it, but experiencing it for yourself is a good time. So I don't really have a lot of people that I would say, like, you shouldn't play this. Like, again, if you want all your zombie apocalypse stories to be gritty and realistic, then don't play this. But I think everyone has it in their heart to play a goofy zombie apocalypse story. So pretty easy recommendations. Game is fun. Insomniac, good at making video games. Who would have thought?
I love that. The Unga Bunga version, game fun, play game.
Yeah, exactly. This is a very Unga Bunga type of game. You will get that type of enjoyment from it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So if your lizard brain likes grinding around and shooting a bunch of zombies, yeah, you'll find something here. So again, no spoiler section, so we're going to wrap up the episode here, and we'll start with our plugs. So, Guhi, tell people about your streams, about your YouTube channel, and anything else that you have going on.
Hey, thank you. So, yeah, I have, I do stream, but not as often as I used to. I have shifted focus to my YouTube channel because we're doing a lot of fun projects on there. We have weekly videos that come out that are either Let's Plays or game guides and or reviews. So we have a little bit of everything. I work with two other people. Senis and Kopak are my partners in crime when it comes to that. And because we have three different people working on the channel, we have a lot of variety. I'm more of the goofy personality who likes to get into discussions and just, you know, be everywhere between really serious or just always goofing around. And then Senis and Kopak are more of the very serious min-maxers, hardcore gamers. So we complement each other pretty well. They're two of my best friends, and it's really fun to have that channel. So if you guys are at all interested, you can follow my YouTube channel. It's Guhi, ITSGOOHI, and it's pretty much that with every other major social media platform.
Awesome. Yeah, and so like, I've watched you stream, I've checked out some of the stuff on YouTube. This will date this episode because it's going to come out in a few months, but like recently I've seen some stuff where you're doing a Let's Play of the new Prince of Persia game, which looked really, really cool. I'm not sure when I'll get a chance to play it, but it does look tight. So you can go check that out on the channel. A lot of like co-op gaming content, Fortnite, and I was looking back in the archives, saw some Lethal Company, which is a game that brings a lot of comedy and good times out. So giving people an idea of what kind of stuff they can expect. And it's all fun. It's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. We cover all the latest games, and the Friday Funnies are my favorite because it's just, it's Unga Bunga content.
Yeah, good stuff. So again, I recommend people check out the YouTube channel, follow on Twitch if there's going to be streams going on too. And I'll put links down in the show notes for that stuff so they can find you easily.
Thank you. Thank you. And one last thing, I would just want a huge thank you to you, Dave, for reaching out. Like I told you before we started, this is one of my favorite things to do, is to hang out and talk about video games. So it was a wonderful experience being on here with you. You're an absolutely lovely person. I can't wait to hopefully do more projects in the future with you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a great time. We talked about before, but like, you worked with the Offshore Games Cast on their huge Game of the Year project that they do every year that I also participate in. And yeah, been following the channel for a little bit now. So it's good to connect as always. And we can always look forward to more podcasts and stuff in the future, for sure.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
All right. Now time to talk about myself. So if people want to support this podcast, again, the best things to do are to, if your favorite podcast platform allows it, like on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podcast Addict, you can leave a rating and review. That's really helpful. If people are looking for Sunset Overdrive podcasts, it will help them find this one. The show is also on YouTube. You can go subscribe. Right now, I don't do anything except just upload the podcast there. But if I ever find some free time, I might try making an actual video sometime. Who knows? But the show is on YouTube if you like to listen to podcasts on YouTube. So you can go subscribe there. You can also join the Discord server, come in. If you've played Sunset Overdrive and want to talk about it, that's a great place to do it. We have a lovely, welcoming community in there, and we would love to have you join too. There's an invite link down in the show notes. I do another podcast called A Top 3 Podcast. That one is just top three lists. Sometimes we do drafts for different topics. That's a good time. And finally, if you would like to support the show monetarily, you can do that at patreon.com/realDaveJackson, where you'll be able to vote in some games that I do on the show. You'll get some bonus podcasts and other treats. So that is all for the episode today. Again, no spoiler section. Go try out Sunset Overdrive. You'll see what we mean. But thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Guhi, again, for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And everyone can tune in next week for the next game to come out of the backlog.
Kill me.